On the border of Bolivia, working for pennies, treated like a slave. The coca fields have to be ready. The spirit of my people is starving, broken and sweaty. Dreaming about revolution, looking at my machete. But the workload is too heavy to rise up in arms. And if I ran away, I know they'd probably murder my moms.
Okay, listen, Juan Valdez, just get me my product before we chop off your hands for workers' misconduct. I got the power to shoot a copper and not get charged. And it would be sad to see your family in front of a firing squad. So the
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Elizabeth Dickinson, who writes the underreported column for the World Affairs Journal. She was previously the projects editor at Foreign Policy Magazine. And prior to that, she worked in West Africa as Nigerian correspondent for The Economist. She has reported from five continents, and her writings appeared in The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, The International Herald Tribune, Newsweek International, and The Guardian. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Dickinson.
Thanks for having me.
And it's been somewhat embarrassing to watch the coverage of the Summit of Americas that just concluded in Cartagena, Colombia. The entire focus of the American press was on a minor scandal involving Secret Service agents and some military personnel who chiseled a local hooker out of her dues. And that basically overshadowed the agenda. And frankly, it's pretty hard to find anywhere in the media what the summit was about.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, add to that the pictures that came out of Hillary Clinton spending just a few moments of enjoying herself in Cartagena, and it really overshadowed the rest of the summit. As you said, it was really embarrassing. A lot of countries came to the table ready to really talk about real policy questions about the drug war, the global economy, and it seemed as if the United States wasn't quite ready to have those debates.
And this has obviously frustrated the president and I think more importantly, the rest of the participants in this summit.
It did, although I would have to say that I think that the U.S. administration and more broadly the government, not just under Obama, but for the last 10 years, has really contributed to its sort of sense of looking behind the times in Latin America. This is a continent, South America and Central America as well. They're on the rise. It's an economically ascendant power. They're experiencing a moment of confidence. Well, they've been largely ignored by Washington for the last 10 years while we've been focusing on Iraq and Afghanistan. And in that time, they've grown more self-confident and less willing to listen and take directions from Washington. So in a way, our sort of ignorance about the continent and watching it grow in the last 10 years has really contributed to that alienation.
Well, as you point out in your article, in the underreported column in the World Affairs Journal, Elizabeth Dickinson, at Summit of the Americas, Washington looks behind the times. You mentioned that Brazil, Chile, Colombia, and Peru are looking really good to investors. In particular, Brazil seems to be forging its own path. It's interesting to note that Brazil, even though it's a democracy, has close ties with the United States, only votes with the United States about 25% of the time. So they are definitely forging their own path.
Yeah, nowhere has that been more clear than in foreign policy, particularly with Brazil. Brazil has really sought to become a global player on the international stage as a mediator. For example, they worked with Turkey a while back to try and arrange a nuclear deal with Iran. That was a deal that really quite angered Washington, actually, because it seemed to sideline the major Western powers in such an issue that's of great importance to them, to Washington, as well as the European capitals. Look, Brazil is ready to play a role on the stage, and its economy puts it in that position. Investors in China, investors elsewhere in Latin America, even American private investors are very aware of this and they've woken up to the fact that Latin America is an ascendant power. Politically, I don't think that the United States has quite gotten to that realization yet.
Well, of course, apart from the focus on the hooker scandal, the only soundbite that made it in the television and papers over here was President Obama saying that he wasn't ready to legalize drugs. That's no surprise because the war on drugs lobby is so embedded in the U.S. economy and in the U.S. government. And it basically is an immovable object. He may make some sort of more nuanced or less nuanced statements after he's re-elected, assuming he is. But it seems that that's basically been what our relationship's been, particularly with Mexico and Colombia. It's all about drugs. And there's this enormous disconnect between the U.S., which is the customer for the drugs, is where the demand is, it's where the money comes from. And yet we consider the war as being fought in other countries, and somehow our hands are clean. I mean, that seems to be a pervasive idea, and one would think that this professorial president would, at some point or other, at least give us a teachable moment about our responsibility for the chaos in Mexico and Colombia in terms of being the customers for drugs.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I think that this is really at the heart of the issue that's separating the U.S. from Latin America. For so long, the U.S. has bought the drugs and then given enough aid to sort of fight these conflicts overseas. Well, at this point, Latin America is fed up. The violence is spiraling. They've tried sort of what Washington's ideas about the war on drugs. They haven't worked in many cases. There have been some successes, but the violence particularly is something which really made a huge impact on the population there and has sparked calls for change. We're at a point, frankly, where I don't think Latin America is going to wait for Washington to change its own policy on the drug war anymore. You have places like Brazil that are very much equipped to tackle the drug war on their own. Brazil, by the way, is also a huge domestic market for drugs. So if they were to pursue an option such as decriminalization, it actually could have a huge market impact. That's something that could happen very, very conceivably without any approval from Washington.
Well, Brazil, of course, have charted their own path in terms of energy independence and ethanol, which I believe at some point soon we're going to be importing their alternative fuels. And plus, they've got massive offshore oil deposits. Is this just the nature now of this new bipolar world, or not this multipolar world, I should say, that we're entering, where there's going to be no hegemon? What's your sense of where the U.S. fits in this? Because in our current presidential campaign, all we hear from both the president and from Mitt Romney is all this jingoism about American exceptionalism and, you know, you can't write us off, we still dominate the world, etc. It seems somewhat atavistic to me.
Make no mistake, America does have a large amount of interest in these places and influence in these places. And I do think that, of course, when Washington comes calling, people listen. And there we have, you know, a lot of sort of tools in our toolbox to that extent. We have the economic power. We have leverage in international institutions. Some of that's going to change. But, you know, the point remains, if Washington is behind the times on just the way the global economy is evolving, that in and of itself will contribute to it becoming less of an important power. I personally think that, you know, if Washington can stay, you know, sort of abreast of where these countries are and sort of what their own economic needs are and what their priorities are, that will make them more relevant and more likely to be an influential player in debates outside of our own region.
Well, I think, though, within the Western Hemispheric nations themselves, at this just-concluded summit in Colombia, we're talking about the U.S. in terms of its waning influence in the South American continent, or the Americas, I should say. But within the Western Hemispheric nations, you do have clear winners and losers, and I guess Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras are teetering on being failed states because of the war on drugs. And we've mentioned Brazil and Chile and Colombia and Peru as having emerging and robust economies. What about the ones that have been that were shut out? Cuba and I guess Venezuela wasn't shut out, but Cuba and Venezuela, of course, are very close.
Well, here's another area where really there's an increasingly large divide between Latin American countries and the U.S. Over Cuba. Cuba obviously very much has a lot of reforms left to go before it is anywhere near to a democracy or anything that would satisfy the human rights concerns of Washington or frankly any observer. But having said that, it is a reality in Latin America that Cuba is integrated in the region, and it simply is not, it doesn't make sense at the end of the day not to have it at this summit. That's something that the Latin American countries were arguing and that Obama was really pushing back on. Obviously, there are domestic political concerns for Obama on that. Obviously, there are domestic concerns in Latin American countries as well, who see, you know, sort of Washington imperialism as sort of the a relic of that, you know, from the Cold War era, as wanting to keep Cuba out. But all of that is really just a microcosm of this broader issue that Washington has simply ignored Latin America for the last decade. And as so many things have changed, including things in Cuba, we seem not to have changed our policy.
So is there any way that these Western Hemisphere countries can, you know, start flexing their muscle? You were suggesting earlier, and it seems to be an interesting thought, that they may go their own way, particularly on decriminalizing drugs. Any other areas where they could perhaps, you know, teach us something, or at least, you know, break the spell that the U.S. has had over them for some time?
Well, one of the most, one of the clearest ways that they are already doing so, actually, is economic trade ties, particularly with China and the Pacific. So something that countries such as Chile have done is they've really tried to open up their markets to Asian investors. Chile, for example, has tried to be the bridge between Chinese goods and the rest of Latin America. They've really experienced a large amount of trade investment from that region. And, for example, one of the main investors now in Chilean copper mines, Chile is one of the world's largest sources of copper, is in our investors from China. So economically, Latin America is very much increasingly connected with the rest of the world, whereas if you looked back 5, 10, certainly 15 or 20 years ago, those ties were almost exclusively with the United States.
So just in closing then, Elizabeth Dickinson, do you think that as the Iraq War has wound down, and of course it's proven to be one of the greatest geopolitical mistakes probably in the history of foreign policy, I recall an Israeli military historian, Martin Van Creewell, described Bush's invasion of Iraq as the worst strategic blunder since Emperor Augustus invaded Germany in 9 AD. There's certainly no question that Iraq is essentially in the Iranian sphere, and that the pullout of Afghanistan, I think, is probably will go ahead on schedule, if not at an accelerated pace. And there'll be a disaster there, obviously left behind, as is Iraq. But it seems to me that maybe what will happen in the next few years that the U.S. will just sort of start concentrating perhaps more on, they've already indicated, a pivot towards Asia. Do you see any possibility of a pivot towards this hemisphere?
I think it is actually inevitable in the long run that that Latin America and the United States and Canada also, frankly, are connected in a way that I think will remain more or less at times. It will ebb and flow. It's maybe in a low point now. I think it will bounce back. And the reason for that simply is because of the demographics in the United States. We have a huge diaspora in the United States from Latin America, which is essentially a constituency towards policy that, you know, should, in theory, influence policy in the region, care about policy in the region, care that we do have a policy towards Latin America. We're two regions that are very interconnected. No matter how globalized the world gets, there's simply no denying that we are geographically destined to be linked. But there are ways to do that right, and there are ways to do that wrong. And I think in the coming years, Washington's going to have to think really hard about what policies it can have towards this ascendant region, how it can take advantage of the economic opportunities that are presented, how it can manage the political consequences and the political ramifications of a region and countries in that region that are very much politically ascendant. Brazil wants to play its own role. Great. So how can the U.S. work with Brazil to do something? These are questions the U.S. hasn't asked yet, I feel, and will need to in the coming years.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Elizabeth Dickinson.
Thank you for having me.
And again, I was speaking with Elizabeth Dickinson, who writes the underreported column for the World Affairs Journal. She was previously the projects editor at Foreign Policy magazine. And prior to joining Foreign Policy, she worked in West Africa as Nigeria correspondent for The Economist. She's reported from five continents, and her writings have appeared in The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, The International Herald Tribune, Newsweek International, and The Guardian. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking about the Arab uprisings.